Okay, open your Bibles, if you will, to Ezekiel chapter 1. Ezekiel chapter 1. The study of Ezekiel can be a very profitable study, and I hope that you will agree as we go through the book. But it's also a book that is sorely misused. For example, let's begin in verse 4 of chapter 1. As I looked, behold, a storm was coming from the north, a great cloud with fire flashing forth continually and a bright light around it, and in its midst something like glowing metal in the midst of the fire. Within it there were figures resembling four living beings, and this was their appearance. They had human form. Each of them had four faces and four wings. Their legs were straight, and their feet were like a calf's hoof, and they gleamed like burnished bronze. Under their wings on the four sides were human hands, and as for the faces and wings of the four of them, their wings touched one another. Their faces did not turn when they moved. Each went straight forward. As for the form of their faces, each had the face of a man. All four had the face of a lion on the right and the face of a bull on the left, and all four had the face of an eagle. Down in verse 15, now as I looked at the living beings, behold, there was a wheel on the earth beside the living beings for each one of them. Then if you'll look down at verse 18, as for their rims, they were lofty and awesome, and the rims of all four of them were full of eyes round about. Now I've just selected some of the passages from chapter 1. We'll go back and look at chapter 1 in a later study. Imagine someone that knows nothing about the Bible and about prophecy, about the nature of the kind of literature that you're reading. And they may read this and think this is maybe Ezekiel was on drugs or something, writing about this kind of stuff. Maybe it was designed to be science fiction. This is the kind of thing, if you go turn on the television, watch a science fiction movie, maybe the kind of graphics you might see. Some actually take it as actual extraterrestrial beings that visited the earth. And all of those kind of ideas are drawn from passages like this in the book of Ezekiel. And this vision that you have described in chapter 1 is one that will have a recurring meaning throughout the book. When you get to Ezekiel 37, look at Ezekiel 37. This is a very common, I say common, people often think of this when they think of Ezekiel, the Valley of Dry Bones. We'll have occasion to study that particular lesson as well, as you see on your schedule of study. Down in verse 16, he talks about two sticks. Take for yourself one stick and write on it for Judah and for the sons of Israel, his companions. Take another stick, write on it for Joseph, the stick of Ephraim, and all his, and all the house of Israel, his companions. Mormons take this and they say, well, the first stick of Judah, that's the Bible. The stick of Joseph, that's the Book of Mormon. And so here in the Bible, you have a prophecy that foreshadowed the Book of Mormon. And if you wonder where they got that out of the chapter, that is a very good question. But nevertheless, that's the way that's used. And so there are all kind of misuses of the book because of imagery like chapter 1, because of the story like in chapter 37, because of some of the very unusual things that Ezekiel was told to do in regard to his prophecy. Some just take the book, Maybe they read it one time, they say, I don't understand this, it's inexplicable, it's not worth my time. As we've said, we will run through some sections that are difficult. But don't make the mistake that it's not a book with tremendous value. In understanding God, understanding the role and duty of one that God appointed to this very difficult task, and of lessons for us as we journey through life and live in difficult times. And so, in fact, on your lesson, the first thing we have is background history, and we want to spend what little time we have this morning talking a little bit about that. Because of time limitations, we'll only be able to introduce it briefly. I put on your lesson some verses to read, 2 Kings 21 through 25, 2 Chronicles 33 through 36. It will not take you very long to read those. I put Jeremiah 1 through 45. That's a rather lengthy reading. You may not want to read all of that. But even if you started, say, in like chapter 21 and read through 45, you'll see places where Jeremiah clearly intersects with the history that's in Ezekiel. And we'll have occasion, as time allows us, to talk about some of that. So that's why we put those on there. And I want to start back in 2 Kings. So we could start with Ezekiel as he enters the picture, but there's a background to it that helps us appreciate Ezekiel, the challenge that was before him, and the work that he had to do. So I want to go back to 2 Kings chapter 21. 2 Kings 21. You'll note in verse 1, a man by the name of Manasseh became the king. When he was 12 years old, he reigned 55 years. Sometimes we don't like the person who's been elected president, but we think, well, at least in 4 years there's a chance to replace him. Maybe he gets the second term and it's 8 years. You think, ooh, that's long enough. This fella reigned 55 years and was one of the most wicked kings that they had. They had a number of wicked kings, only a few good ones, but this fellow was especially wicked. If you look down here in 2 Kings chapter 1, well, I wish we had time to read all of the first 15 verses. I will note here in verse 3, well, let me start in verse 2. He did evil in the sight of the Lord according to the abominations of the nations whom the Lord dispossessed before the sons of Israel. In other words, he borrowed his religion from the pagan religions that were already in the land instead of going to the Word of God to find out how to serve God. And then it began to talk about some specifics, rebuilding the high places, make an altar for Baal and Asherah. These were male and female idols. In verse 4, you can see how aggressive he was. He built altars in the house of the Lord. Imagine if you came to the building today, and as you walked in, there was an idol. Some idol that encouraged immorality and ungodliness. That's what Manasseh put in the temple. We'll read more about that in Josiah's reform in just a minute. In verse 5, he built altars for all the host of heaven in the two courts of the house of the Lord. Imagine as you drove up in the parking lot, you'd see idols out there. And then you come in the building. There's more in the building. That's Manasseh. More about that in verse 7. Look at verse 9. He said they did not listen. God had talked about the warning that he had given the nation, that the promise he had made, verse 8, that if they'd obey him, he would bless them. But they did not listen, verse 9. And Manasseh seduced them to do evil. Israel did not have to follow Manasseh. Here it says he seduced them to do evil. He gave the opportunity. He paved the way. This is just a lesson in itself, that I may do something, and because of my example and because of my influence, it is responsible for causing others to follow in that path. We might say, that's their problem. Well, it is their problem. But look at this. It's also your problem. If you seduce people by your example, you pave the way, he seduced them to do evil, we shall be held responsible before God. Down in verse 11, it says about this man, he had done wickedly more than all the Amorites who were before him, and has made Judah sin. Did he force them? Did he hold a sword to their throat? No, but he provided the opportunity. There it was when they came to worship with the idols. So, in verse 12 through 15, this began to set the stage for Ezekiel. You say, why are we reading about Manasseh? Therefore, verse 12, says the Lord, the God of Israel, behold, I'm bringing such calamity on Jerusalem and Judah that whoever hears of it, both his ears will tingle. I will stretch over Jerusalem the lion of Samaria and the plummet of the house of Ahab, the plumb bob, in other words. And I'll wipe Jerusalem as one wipes a dish, wiping it and turning it upside down. You can see it's complete destruction that is being prophesied for this city. This was their capital city. It was their religious city. It was where the temple was, where the ark had been placed. God said, I'll put my name there. He said, I'm going to wipe it off, wipe it out. He said, I will abandon the remnant of my inheritance and deliver them into the hand of their enemies. They'll become as plunder and spoil to their enemies. But aren't they God's people? He said, I'm abandoning them. No more protection. They're not going to be treated with special favor in the way of provision or protection any longer. Why? Because they've done evil in my sight, have been provoked me to anger. Note this next phrase. Since the days their fathers came from Egypt, even to this day. We learn in other passages, both in the Old Testament and Stephen's sermon, they carried idols with them from Egypt. And so when they got to the Promised Land, there was already an idolatry among them. You remember Joshua made the challenge. You choose today who you're going to serve. And so this had been a problem throughout their history. God has sent prophet after prophet after prophet after prophet. Their cup's full. He said, this is it. They're going to suffer the consequences. God is very patient, but he also is a God of wrath and a God of justice, and he's going to bring the destruction on Jerusalem. When you get to the book of Ezekiel, you're going to see that's a focal point. Because Ezekiel, as we'll learn, was taken captive. And he was brought over to Babylon. And there, a number of the Jews were there. And he's prophesying to them. And they don't like what he's saying about the fall of the city and those kind of things. But here's the background to that. You down verse 19, you have Manasseh died. Something I want you to note before I go to Ammon. Look at 2 Chronicles 34. It's actually 33. 2 Chronicles 33. And look at verse 11. Therefore the Lord brought the commanders of the army of the king of Assyria against them, and they captured Manasseh with hooks, bound him with bronze chains, and took him to Babylon. At this time, Esarhaddon, likely the Assyrian ruler being talked about, and he had built a palace in Babylon. And so he brings Manasseh to Babylon. When he was in distress, he entreated the Lord his God and humbled himself greatly before the God of his fathers. Okay. But he had practiced idolatry, he had killed innocent people, he had burned his son in the fire to Molech. This was one wicked, wicked man. Now, he's in trouble. He prays to God. He humbles his heart. Look what happens. When he prayed to him, he was moved by his entreaty and heard his supplication and brought him again to Jerusalem to his kingdom. Then Manasseh knew that the Lord was God. Don't ever underestimate the mercy, the compassion of our God. If there's anything we can learn, it's that. As wicked a man as he was, when he humbled his heart and prayed to God, God listened. That's Manasseh. But his reforms weren't thorough like his grandsons would be, Josiah. He had a son now that come to the throne. We're back in 2 Kings 21:19. His name was Ammon. He was 22 years old. He reigned 2 years. And as you read the verse 21, he walked in the way his father had walked. In other words, he served the idols. So he was a wicked man, possibly restored. Manasseh had thrown out some of the stuff that he had put in the temple, thrown it out, but he didn't destroy it. But Ammon may have been one that restored that, because when you get to Josiah, you're going to find all those things in the temple. So when you get to chapter 22, you're to Josiah. Now you notice on your lesson, I've got 627 B.C. Jeremiah begins his prophetic ministry. So to give you a time frame where we're at right now, Josiah began his reign in 640. And he reigned in 609. So it's during the reign of Josiah that Jeremiah, this prophet, was born. Began his ministry, excuse me. And when he began his ministry, we don't know exactly how old he was, maybe 20, 30 years old. But Jeremiah had been exposed to what we've been reading about. You're going to read a little bit later about Ezekiel being born in 622. And you're going to see, as he grew up as a boy, he was exposed to a lot of these things. But nevertheless, we have Josiah, 640 to 609, one of the most, if not the most remarkable king outside of David that you read about in the Old Testament. Hold your finger at 2 Kings 22. Go to 2 Chronicles 34. So Kings and Chronicles parallel one another in a number of respects, and it's good when you're studying to look at your references, at the parallel references. They'll be helpful. Here's chapter 34. Josiah was 8 years old when he became king. I sure would like to know more about the circumstances surrounding this, an eight-year-old boy becoming king. Who was influencing him? Was it a priest? Was it his mother? We don't know. But he was a remarkable young boy, even at eight. You'll note in verse 3, in the eighth year of his reign, when he was 16 years old, just 16, where most boys are thinking about today, thinking about teenage type things and having fun and that kind of thing. He's now at 16 undertaking a tremendous purging of the land. It's going to go against those who are older than him. It's going to go against the entrenched tradition. But he's going to purge the land as best he can. And you see that in verse 3. While he was still a youth, he began to seek the God of his father. And then in the 12th year, when he's 20, that's when he actually began the purging. He began to purge Judah and Jerusalem of the high place. So 16, he set his mind to do it. 20, he undertakes this purge. And you have a very brief description of it here in verse 4. Now go back to 2 Kings 23. When you have time, we don't have time this morning. Start in 2 Kings 23, verse 4. And read through that chapter. It is amazing the kind of things that Josiah was dealing with, 20 years old, purging the land. You start reading about verse 4, the bring out of the temple of the Lord all the vessels that were for Baal, for Asherah, for all the host of heaven. He brought them out. Now, it's true, Manasseh had gotten rid of some of them, but look what Josiah does. I'm going to fix it. They're not going to put them back in. You know, you think about these idols, and maybe they were worth something, and maybe they'd be a good historical monument, not to worship, just to say, look what we had in the past, but look what Josiah did. He burned them. But they're not going to use this again. He burned them and carried their ashes to Bethel. Verse 5, he did away with the idolatrous priests. Look down at verse 20. The priests of the high places who were there, he slaughtered on the altars. You want to know what he did when he did away with them? There you have it. 20 years old. Say, is that godly? Very godly. One of the most godly kings there was. And people confuse godliness with no courage, no boldness. He went against, you can imagine how much he was disliked, how much opposition there was. And what's interesting, while he's doing all these external reforms, I have Jeremiah on here. If you were to read those chapters in Jeremiah, you'll see that while Josiah was doing these external reforms, internally the people were still corrupt. You can't force people's hearts to change. Remember, we're getting to the period where Ezekiel's going to come on the picture. This is what he was dealing with. And so as you read chapter 23, you read about all these things in the temple that were taken out. Verse 7, he broke down the houses of the male cut cult prostitutes. Where were they? Can you imagine having a place for cult prostitutes in the house of the Lord? They did. And you go on and read the chapter, it's just amazing what this young man did at the age of 20. Now, when you get back in 2 Kings 22, 2 Kings 23, 4 is out of chronological order. It's just a comprehensive list. Chronicles gives you the chronological order. But back in chapter 22, verse 8, they've made this purge, and now they're redoing the temple. Amazing, they had lost the law. They'd lost the Bible that was supposed to be the temple Bible, and it was found. And so they brought it to Josiah and read it, and it had tremendous impact upon him. Verse 10 says, Shaphan read it in the presence of the king. Verse 11, when the king heard the words of the law, he tore his clothes. Would to God we had people that were so impacted by the message of God today. That's what happened with Josiah. And he made a covenant telling the people, going to have to obey the law. But you know, people can externally say, I'll keep a covenant and not do it. Kind of like a marriage covenant. You take this woman, you take this man, yes, you're going to be true to him, yes. But they don't always keep their covenant. You're going to honor them, yes, but do they? And so people can take a covenant, it doesn't mean they're going to do it. That's what happened here. But God, again, look down at verse 16 and 17 of chapter 22. Here's the background for Ezekiel. I bring evil on this place and on its inhabitants, even all the words of the book which the king of Judah has read, because they have forsaken me and have burned incense to other gods, that they might provoke me to anger with all the work of their hands. Therefore, my wrath burns against this place, and it shall not be quenched. Moses warned about that, 1500 B.C. You got a choice, life or death. Here's what can happen to you. And so all these years they had made the wrong choice. There were, like I say, a few good kings like Hezekiah, but on the whole, they were corrupt in the nation. So God says, here's the fate that they're going to suffer. It's very interesting if you look at chapter 22, verse 18. If God came to you and told you, you're a good person. You have been dedicated to my will. Therefore, I'm going to take your life early. What? Yeah, I love you. That's why I'm going to do it. That's what he told Josiah. Look, he said, verse 18, to the king of Judah who sent you to inquire of the Lord, thus you shall say to him, thus says the Lord God of Israel, regarding the words which you have heard, because your heart was tender and you humbled yourself before the Lord when you heard what I spoke against this place and against its inhabitants, that they should become a desolation and a curse, and you have torn your clothes and wept before me, I truly have heard you, declares the Lord. Therefore, behold, I will gather you to your fathers, and you will be gathered to your grave in peace, and your eyes will not see all the evil which I will bring upon this place. And so he began reigning in 640 when he was 8, died in 609, reigned 31 years, 39 years old. Best king they had, killed in battle. 39 years old. By God's grace. Because the last five kings, starting with Josiah and his sons, so very, very wicked time, bad time. And that's the time in which we get to the captivity. So look on your lesson. The next thing we have, 622, Ezekiel's born. So go back. We'll stay in Kings for just a moment. And go to chapter 24 and verse 8. 24 verse 8. Now, Josiah, two of Josiah's sons reigned. First, Jehoahaz, verse 31 of chapter 23. He only reigned 3 months. He was wicked. And then, verse 36 of chapter 23, Jehoiakim, he was wicked. And he reigned 11 years. And then Jehoiakim, who was Jehoiakim's son, so Josiah's grandson, he takes the throne. He only reigns 3 months. He was 18 years old. Now, you may have a Bible that has dates in the margin. This one does. But even if you don't, you might want to write out beside that 598 or 7 B.C. because that's where we're at, about 597 B.C. So, what happened in 597? It's what's called the second captivity. The first captivity is back up here when Nebuchadnezzar came in 605, back up the first part of chapter 24 against Jehoiakim. But this is the second time that he takes captives, 597. And down in verse 14, it says about this captivity, he led away all Jerusalem and all the captains and all the mighty men of valor, 10,000 captives, and all the craftsmen and the smiths. None remained but the poorest of the land. So what does that have to do with Ezekiel? He's one of those captives. And so, born in 622, here we're at 597. Now you go to Ezekiel chapter 1. Verse 30, came about in the 30th year, that is his 30th year, he was 30 years old. What was his 30th year? Verse 2, the fifth year of King Jehoiakim's exile. So 597, 5 years later, 592, that's when Ezekiel started prophesying. And if he's 30 then, that's how you get his birth at 622 B.C. So, Ezekiel is born 622. He lives through these, at least part of these wicked kings. He sees the corruption. He sees what's happening. Imagine turning on your television. Oh, the president has only been president 3 months. He's gone. An enemy has come and conquered him. Oh, you put another one up. Oh, he's gone. Put another one up. Oh, he's gone. Just wickedness and tumult. Ezekiel's growing up as a boy in all of this. And then he is taken captive. And you're going to see dates in the book of Ezekiel. We'll talk about that when we talk about the book. And several of these dates date from this point right here, 2 Kings 24:8, this second captivity, 597. So I have that on your sheet. A little later, if you go down your sheet, I have the 597 date, second captivity, Ezekiel taken captive, and I have these verses we just looked at in 2 Kings 24 and Ezekiel chapter 1 and 2. I've got a couple other verses there in Ezekiel. Look at Ezekiel 33:21. In the 12th year of our exile. Well, there was an exile in 605, but he's not talking about that one. He's talking about this 597 date when he was taken captive. So your Bible may have a date out beside it or something, but this one has 585, which would be pretty close to correct. 85 plus 12, 597, we're back to that date. So you see, as you read the book of Ezekiel, he's got some time stamps. Several of these time stamps are dating from this event that we're reading about back here in 2 Kings chapter 24. In chapter 40 of Ezekiel, in verse 1, in the 25th year of our exile. So that's approximately 573. Add 25, you're back up to 597 or 8. So again, you see how as we study Ezekiel and we see these time stamps, our exile when Ezekiel was taken captive by Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, so let's go back and look at 2 Kings 24:1. In his days, that's Jehoiakim, as you see in 23:36. So you had Josiah, good king. You wonder how such good men can have such sorry sons, and how such sorry fathers can have such good sons. But it happened. You take Josiah, his grandfather was one of the most wicked kings there ever was, Manasseh. His daddy, rotten. No indication he ever had a penitent heart. Sometimes people blame their life on their family. Well, my family was dysfunctional. My dad was a hypocrite. My mother this and that. Look at Josiah. Look at his daddy. Look at his granddaddy. But he chose to serve the Lord. But in spite of his good influence, look at his boys. Boys and girls are free moral agents. They can choose to ignore what they've been given by their grandparents and parents, the faith that they, that inheritance of faith. And that's what you have in his boys. So here we're talking about the reign of Jehoiakim, 2336 and 24:1. In his days, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up, and Jehoiakim became his servant for 3 years. So this is 605. And this is the first captivity. A lot of interesting background to all of this. Nabopolassar was actually king of Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar came with his armies against Jerusalem, heard that his father was sick, so he went back, became king, but he took captives with him when he went back. Look over at the book of Daniel. I have this on your lesson. Look at Daniel chapter 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, now you're going to find between Daniel and Jeremiah what seems to be contradiction. One will say third year, one will say fourth. It's not a contradiction. It depends on what kind of dating system they were using. That's another study, but be that as it may, they're talking about the same thing. So in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, so that's where we are back here in 2 Kings 24. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. The Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. And then he talks about him bringing some people back to Babylon. And you'll note these were youths, verse 4, in whom were no defect, good looking, showing intelligence, etc. And so verse 6, now among them from the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Or we know them often as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were given idolatrous names. But among those were Daniel. Daniel, this is 605, and we know from his book he prophesied till about 536. So that's what, 70 years? And so it's likely Daniel, when he was taken captive, was maybe 15 to 18 years old, young man. Isn't this interesting? You have Josiah, 16 years old, says, I'm going to serve the Lord. I don't care what my daddy and my granddaddy did. Here you have Daniel taken captive, 605. He's got a heart to serve the Lord. Here you've got Jeremiah. We don't know how old he was when he started his prophecy. Maybe 20, 30 years old. Another young man leading the charge of righteousness. And so sometimes it's not the older white-haired guys that are leading the charge of righteousness. They're the ones that are entrenched in tradition and sin. But that's what you have. And so you have Daniel, who's taken captive with his three friends. Jeremiah talks about it in Jeremiah 25. Well, I don't know that we'd have time to turn over there right now, but I gave you the chapters in Jeremiah, and he talks about this particular event. Another just interesting thing along this line, at 605, the king of Egypt engaged the Babylonians in battle, trying to keep them from, they were a rising power. But they were defeated in what's called the Battle of Carchemish. It was a decisive battle. You see down in verse 7, the king of Egypt did not come out of his land again, but the king of Babylon had taken all that belonged to the king of Egypt from the book of Egypt to the river Euphrates. So why do we mention that? Because not only in Isaiah, but you'll find throughout these prophets that prophesied during this time, they wanted to lean on Egypt. They thought Egypt would be their savior against Babylon. The prophet said, don't lean on Egypt, don't lean on Egypt. But they'd lean on Egypt. And so you have these historical incidents that are interwoven in all of this. Okay, 592, Ezekiel began his prophetic work. We have that, Ezekiel chapter 1 and verse 2. Back in 2 Kings now, chapter 25. So, verse 18, Zedekiah becomes king. And Zedekiah was another son of Josiah, Jehoiakim's uncle, not his son. That's important when you read the statement that Jeconiah or Coniah or Jehoiakim, all the same person, would have no one of his descendants sitting on the throne and prospering. But you got another king, but it's his uncle, not his son. That's Zedekiah. And so here's Zedekiah. He reigned 11 years. And it's going to be interesting if you read Jeremiah, and then as we go through Ezekiel, Zedekiah, the prophets, would encourage him, submit to Nebuchadnezzar. Jerusalem's still going to be judged, but you'll save your life. But he had a lot of other voices, false prophets, saying, oh, Jeremiah's wrong, it's not going to happen. All this kind of noise coming from the background, and Zedekiah had to decide who to listen to. Well, he listened to the wrong people. And of course, when it did happen, he tried to flee. They captured him, put out his eyes, killed his son before him, took him to Babylon as a captive. Because he wouldn't listen. And so here's Zedekiah. Now, when you get to chapter 25, the ninth year of his reign, the 10th day of the 10th month, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came, he and all his army, against Jerusalem, camped against it, and built a siege wall around it. You'll note down in verse 2, it goes to the 11th year of King Zedekiah on the ninth day of the 4th month. So 18 months, you can't get out of the city. You can't go to the fields. You can't get crops. You can't get supply. Guess what's going to happen in the city? Famine. There's going to be all kind of problem within the city in that 18 months. Very, very bad. Finally, after these 18 months, the king breaks the walls, they enter the city. You're going to read about that in Ezekiel. And so we're looking at the background for the prophecy in Ezekiel. When he entered the city, he burnt the city, burnt the houses, took the other stuff from the temple, destroyed the leading people, killed a bunch of the people, and then took some more captives again on this third time that he came against the city. So 605, 597, 586 are three very important times. Whether you remember those numbers or not, it's three very important times when Nebuchadnezzar came against Jerusalem. And 586 is very important. Now, that turn to Jeremiah 25. Verse 1. The word that came to Jeremiah concerning all the people of Judah in the fourth year of Jehoiakim. That's back in chapter 24, verse 1 of Kings. It was the first year of Nebuchadnezzar. Remember, I said he went back. Nabopolassar, his father, died, so he took the throne. And so, you get down to verse 11. This whole land will be a desolation and a horror, and these nations will serve the king of Babylon 70 years. So here is one way to measure the 70 years of captivity from that first time that you're reading about in 2 Kings 24, 1, 605. So that brings you to about 536, when Cyrus gave a proclamation that the captives could be set free and return to their homeland. And so, verse 12, it will be when 70 years are completed. Guess who read that? Daniel. When you read the book of Daniel, you'll see that he read about this. And he lived to that time. He said, oh, it's about that time. He anticipated it. And so you can see all these prophets blending together. You have Jeremiah prophesying to the people back in Jerusalem. He was left there to prophesy. You have Ezekiel taken captive over to Babylon to prophesy to the people over there. You have Daniel, who was taken captive, but he wasn't to the common man. He was prophesying to the rulers. There were some other prophets in this period. Zephaniah, who prophesied during the reign of Josiah. There was Nahum, who prophesied to Nineveh. There was Huldah, this woman, who prophesied in the time of Josiah. So there were a number of different prophets at work during this period. There is, in Jeremiah, a warning about the kind of people that would be taken captive. And what he is warned about is that these people that would be taken captive, he calls them bad figs. I mean, they were so bad you can't eat them. I mean, the people that would be left in the land, are the bad figs. That's the ones that Jeremiah prophesied to. But then they were good, quote, good fig be taken captive. That's the ones Ezekiel are going to be prophesying to. When you read the book of Ezekiel, remember that phrase, good figs. Because what you're going to find is these people are hard-headed. They won't listen. Good. So, you know, we think our situation's bad. You read the book of Ezekiel, you read the book of Jeremiah, you can see that you have a blessing to sit in this room today. And in a few minutes with all the others who have come in, with people who love the word of the Lord and are trying to do it, compared to the kind of things that these prophets were facing back during their day. Okay, I've got a number of other dates, but we're not going to have time to deal with those, about the returns, that kind of thing, in our class today. I tried to be brief on what I gave you on the sheet because I knew time was limited. Hopefully it wasn't too confusing. Let me say that here's the table of contents on your lesson of the kind of things we're going to be studying from week to week. There's a schedule. You'll note at the top of the schedule it says tentative. In other words, we may not be right on target, but say you had to be out of town and you were sick and you say, I wonder about where we are. This will give you at least some idea based on the date about where we are in our study. And so that's why we made that up. And to be kind of a timeline to kind of gauge how we're doing, because we could spend 6 months studying Ezekiel if we allowed ourselves. Okay? Any comments before we close the class? Now, there were no questions on that first lesson, but you'll see on that second lesson, we do have some suggested work. And so look at that lesson and Ezekiel, the man in the book, and there'll be some things there that will be of interest, I hope. And we'll talk about Ezekiel, the man in the book, in our class on Wednesday night. Thank you.